Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the 99%. I have Elliot Bassett with me. Give him a shout out.
Hey, Jesse. How you doing?
Excellent. Excellent. How's the weather in Montana?
It's beautiful. It's 70 degrees and sunny. There's no forest fire smoke. But don't worry. It'll be cold and snowing in the mountains in like three more days. So should be good.
Nice. Yeah. Winter is coming.
It is.
And we also have Marilyn Chakota. Hello.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Excellent. Excellent.
Very well.
Today we are talking about a subject that is near and dear to my heart. We are talking about panic training. I'm a huge fan of basically panic anything. So then when it comes to panic training, it's like another level. It's by far one of my favorite things to do.
For the demise and of your own life.
Just when I hear you say the word panic, I get a little anxiety. Like, oh God.
Yeah, I mean, it amps me up a little bit. A few heartbeats, I'm like, just gets me jazzed up a little. And yeah, we are kind of early October, and there are some fall races just starting to pop up on the calendar, or just I guess maybe still staying on the calendar a little longer than most people maybe thought they would stay, which is causing, I think, a few people to say, oh, I need to get ready for this race because it looks like it's still going to happen. And I am 100% one of those people who I'm like, was kind of training. And now I'm like, well, Arizona is probably going to happen, Ironman Arizona. So it is time to like knuckle down and panic train for Ironman Arizona.
Well, I was going to say, what is panic training then? Marilyn, Jesse, what do you guys think it is? Like, what's your definition?
Yeah, I mean, I'm really interested to hear Jesse's definition because this is like so near and dear to his heart. And he's like in the middle of it. So like, what does that look like?
I could go a lot of ways and make this definition super long, but to try and like narrow it down, I would say I have like jumps in my training that are bigger than I would normally take had I had like laid out a season plan for Arizona. The easiest example that I just did is I went from my longest run of being 14 miles and then I jumped to a long run of 18 miles. And I usually would never make a jump that big, especially getting up towards the 18 mile range. That's kind of a, yeah. So I just did that and I survived. So, you know, I got one step of panic training out of the way.
Well, I guess I'm wondering what causes one to panic train? Like, what is the reason? Like you said, like the race is coming up, but it's like an unexpected race coming up essentially, right? Or like a change of plans for whatever reason. You thought your season was over and now there's this new opportunity and it's coming up, or you're coming off an injury, or you're coming off a sickness, or you're coming off a crazy spell of like work being really busy and you weren't as well trained for a month or two for whatever reason. And now you're like, oh, well, even if it wasn't a pandemic, you know, like maybe just work got crazy hectic and you did a third of your workouts or half of your workouts for a month or two. So your fitness is not great. Or it's not where you want it to be. And all of a sudden that race is still there. And is it 2 weeks away? Is it 6 weeks away or 8 weeks away? I feel like if it's more than 8 weeks away, maybe we're not talking about panic training. Is that fair to say?
Yeah. And it could also be a mindset too, right? It's like you weren't thinking about it long-term and all of a sudden it's there for whatever reason, a goal shift in some capacity that kind of just pops out of nowhere, I guess. So yeah, you're not exactly where you think you want to be. And then all of a sudden there's this race and yeah, it could be as simple as like, I wasn't planning on this all year. So now I feel a little bit panicky about this being here.
Marilyn, did you ever, when you were racing professionally, did you ever have any examples that stand out that went particularly well or not so well?
Yeah, you know what's interesting with this conversation is that, like, I certainly went to events based on, they weren't part of the plan. You know, it was like, for me, a couple of events were like, I need some money. and an event popped up that had some good prize money. I was like, I need to go. And you're looking at your schedule going, this isn't like perfect timing. It's not part of a structured plan. It's not like all the pieces that go into what we would call this like magical recipe for a great performance. It was like none of those things. I was like, I'm going to do this. And I think that's, you know, a little bit about what you're talking about too, Jesse. And I had races like that for sure. It was like, hey, it's go time. There's a race and we got to go to it for whatever reason, whether it's, you know, for racing professionally for money or all of a sudden there hasn't been any races and now there is. And honestly, the ones that I did that with actually went pretty well. You know, it sounds like we say panic training and automatically without us having a big conversation at the front end, I'm sure a lot of people think negatively when they hear the word panic. They assume like panic means something negative or a poor result at the end. However, when I did not so much panic, but like randomly race suddenly, the results that I had during those times were really successful. I actually had some of my best races like that. So
what do you think led to that being successful?
Well, this is where, you know, it's going to be different for each athlete.
Specifically for you in those races.
For me, it was that my training was consistently pretty high all the time, regardless of whether I was racing or not. And so I wasn't one of these people who did like major, you know, very structured blocks or anything like
or
that.
Or by high, you mean you kept a steady level of fitness.
Yeah.
You didn't have a lot of dips.
Exactly. Yeah. And I chased the sun too. So I spent half the year in the Northern Hemisphere, half the year in the Southern Hemisphere. So there was no, it was like a continuous, not only, you know, training 12 months of the year, but also racing 12 months of the year. So I was never really that far away from being able to go to an event at any time. And raced, like I say, like year round for like 5 years. So when it was like, okay, this event's popped up, there's some money to grab on the line, I'm just gonna have a little rest on Thursday and Friday and jump into it. I can even remember way back in the day, this is really dating myself, when I did the very first Epic Camp. And, you know, those were mega, mega mile training camps. And in the middle of the training camps.
Those in Christchurch?
Those are in New Zealand. Well, we went across the entire country of New Zealand.
Yeah.
Point to point. And right in the middle of it, we did a half Ironman. I probably had one of my fastest half Ironmans. So I think because there wasn't so much, you know, I guess like if it was a major Ironman, there was a little bit more attention to detail as far as
how much do you think was just like a mental, it was easy for you to just like not have to think about something and then just take a few days easy and let it rip.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think there's something to that, right? I mean, I think for sometimes the taper and all of that is just, it's overthought a little bit. It's been in, especially for really long course racing, maybe people overthink it a little bit. Mm-hmm. And as long as you're...
Wait, you don't say? You don't need 4 weeks of taper?
Yeah, and I think also if you're pretty fit all the time, there's not a necessity to ramp it up suddenly mm-hmm. for 6 weeks because the risk in that is pretty high. And if you get an injury right before, now you're not going to race at all, or you get sick right before. And so... if you're training pretty well all the time and then you do, you know, you just rest a couple of days and go race, you know, you tend to actually have some of your best performances because you're not overdone in any area. You're not overprepared in any area and you're not overly stressed out or rested too long or all those things. So,
but that's, I guess I was going to say like specifically for you, like you were training really well, really steady.
Yeah.
Jesse, you're not quite in the same boat at the moment, would you say?
Yeah. And again,
if we're just going to use personal, like up to date, like what you're going through at the moment.
Yeah. I would say I'm not in the exact same boat, but I would say it is also like, a little bit of a mental thing, right? Where I've been like training, but not like thinking about anything. And I'm probably not as far away from that as like my fitness, like I guess numbers are probably not as far away from being ready as I am like mentally thinking I am. If that makes sense.
You need like to have faith. You got to have faith.
Right. But just to jump back on the jumping into races, I feel like I totally agree that like when I have done that in the past and like have had like lower expectations, cause I'm just like, oh, I'm just kind of training and then taking a few days and doing a race. That has gone really well. Cause there hasn't been this big momentous, like, 12 week build, all this pressure going to Oceanside for the first race of the year. I've got to do really well. And then you get there and you're like, oh man, I'm like cracking from the pressure I'm putting on myself, where you show up like a few weeks later at the next race, you're like, how'd I go? So much better. Like, I'm not any more fit, but like, I just wasn't thinking about this race as much. And I think there can be a big component there of, yeah, just like pressure and overthinking races that make it so you don't get to eke the best out of yourself. And as you guys are saying, sometimes you show up like 90, 95% fit and you're not like that 5% is like a good enough cushion that you're not like riding that line at any time and you're happy and healthy and you just go and you're like, oh, I feel great on the day. Cause you know, you never were like, reaching the breaking point going into that race. So you just kind of come together a lot better.
I think the important thing to talk about too with this though is that, you know, if you have spent an extended period of time where your training level is pretty low, because both of our examples are like, if we had to put real numbers on it back then, just to give people an example, I would average anywhere from 27 to 32 hours a week training a week, week in and week out, year round. And so that's really high for a female. I think probably most female athletes don't really even train that high volume anymore. It's gotten more refined since back then. Maybe some do, but you know, it was a lot, you know, it was a lot of training all the time and at altitude and, you know, with pretty good intensity and all of those things. So, you know, it's much different than someone coming from, if they've only been training 8 hours a week, maintaining things, and then they're saying, I want to go do an Ironman in 6 weeks. Now that is an element of panic. I mean, it's like, that's when you have to have a real conversation with yourself. Like, okay, how long have I been in the sport? What was I doing the 6 months prior? Where really truly am I at? Because there has to be like a level of reality. Like, okay, if you're only training, let's say 6 to 10 hours a week for the last 6 months, and then you see Ironman Arizona pop up and you say, I've got 6 weeks, I'm going to suddenly try and get myself Ironman shape to race for a good result. Is that, now it does feel like panic, and is that realistic? And that's a conversation. So even Jesse, you're saying like, you didn't feel like where I was at, in terms of just being able to roll right into a race off a couple of days rest, but put some real numbers to what you were doing to what like panic 6 weeks might look like. What's the big difference there?
Yeah. I mean, I was like, I think I was rolling pretty consistent around 20 hours with some weeks a little higher than that.
But for record, like for you, that's still within 80, 85% of what you do at max.
Yeah. Yeah. I like, you know, occasionally if, the stars align, I might be able to get a 30 hour weekend, but, that's pretty rare. And, I'd say, if I have consistent like 25, 26 hour weeks for a few weeks in a row, then that's pretty good for me. So yeah, I'm not too far away to Elliot's point, right?
So if you, like, obviously you guys are both coming to it from, or a stronger background. I think one thing when you're looking at panic training, it doesn't really, whatever your background is, you have to consider that. And then you have to consider like how far away is your current training to what the goal you have? And by goal, I mean what the race is. What is the demand of the race? And if it's an Ironman, you know, like obviously you have to swim and not be beat up from the swim, not be exhausted from the swim. You have to be able to do the bike ride. And so to me, the panic aspect of it is a lot of like the smaller details. Like, do you have your fueling figured out? Because if you only have like, let's say 6 weeks, 7 weeks, you're going to get a little bit fitter. You know, 8 weeks is enough time to gain some fitness. 6 weeks is enough time to gain some fitness. 4 weeks is not that much time to gain that much fitness. You can gain a little, but not a ton. So when you're in that period of time, like I always, if I'm working with an athlete who's in that situation, I'm always looking at, do they have their pacing figured out like perfectly? Do they have their fueling figured out? Are they mentally committed to going in and kind of like putting a governor on their early performance because they maybe lack the fitness to go that long? And then depending on the race, I just try to prepare them as much as possible for the muscular fatigue, because we're already probably going in trying to knock them down a notch so that they can make it to the end without blowing up. Because in that situation, you're not looking for like a miracle performance. You're looking to just like do what you can with the fitness you have, right? We're not looking to like paint the perfect masterpiece. I don't know. That's my personal thought. And like Marilyn, you would have been in a way different situation if you had a bunch of fitness. In that situation, you're going for broke because you already were so damn fit. You just maybe didn't do the last two or three perfect workouts. But yeah. Jesse, I feel like you're a little more in that mold of like, maybe you shouldn't be trying to bump your mileage from 14 to 18 immediately. You should just be like focusing.
Too
on
late, too doing. Late. Already happened.
I do
you
think
also, but you also have more than 8 weeks.
Yeah.
And the other thing too, is like, so someone like you, Jesse, or like the backgrounds that we're talking about here up at the front here, is that it depends how long you've been in the sport and how long you've been training and how many races you've done. Like if someone's only ever done one Ironman before, or they've only been training at a high level for 2 years, you know, that looks a lot different than someone who's been training, you know, at a high level for 7 years or 5 years and they've raced, you know, 10 Ironmans. The response to training, you might actually, I've certainly seen plenty of athletes where within 3 weeks, they actually come into form. They peak and come into form. So you have to actually look at it and go, okay, if we're talking about this situation in particular, if we've got 6 weeks, that's almost like not panic. That's like, don't panic mentally, because physically you have a long time and there's a chance you could miss the mark by going too hard too soon and not actually like being in your best form by the time you get to the end of the 6 weeks. It's like you get there in like 4 weeks and you're like, oh shit, I got to ride this out for two more weeks and I missed the mark. So I think, you know, for newer athletes, especially new high level athletes, they can look at like, oh, 6 weeks actually, or 8 weeks or whatever. It might have an element of panic because it's not really long for them. And maybe they don't have a lot of races or miles in their legs. But for a seasoned athlete who's raced a lot and been doing it a long time, they can look at that and mentally they might be panicking, but they have to like step back a little and go, actually, I could see myself coming into form in like 3 weeks time. So I gotta lay out a plan from here and sort of regulate that intensity into the event. I don't know if you guys have some things to add to that.
I think that only really happens with extremely fit people. Like there's a small, like you and Jesse might fall into that realm. Yeah. But I mean, like, I guess, like, yeah, that's a real thing that happens. But I don't think that happens with any, like, I don't even know if that happens with 2/3 of the pro field.
But just looking at, say, our current situation right now, where we have, like, people that maybe have been doing, like, training block after training block since the spring.
Yeah.
And maybe they're like, oh, yeah, I've only been sitting on, like, let's say, like, 12, 15 hours because they're full-time working people and that's what they've been doing. But then they say, okay, I've been consistently doing this for like 3/4 of a year now. So like maybe they could be in a place where they can springboard in 6 weeks, even only off of like say 12 hours, if it's been like a pretty good 12 hours, and it's been for, you know, 8 months straight. So there could be like in this situation, there could be more people in that situation than like ever before.
For sure. Yeah,
No, yeah, go for it. Yeah.
I was going to say, like, to me, I agree, but like when you're in that situation, I guess I think like if you're doing a workout that's going to bring you to peak fitness super fast, then you're also probably pushing the limits of what they can handle anyways. And if you're doing that, you're probably not properly preparing for the race, from my opinion. It's like you're going to be doing workouts that are really testing what you can do, as opposed to like just getting like trying to spend more time figuring out your fueling and your pacing and whatnot. And if you're in like, if you totally blow a pacing workout, sure, it might be really hard, but like, I think you just want to make sure you're not breaking them too, because the other part of panic training is there's not much time to recover. So if you're doing it right, like you're not doing any sort of big, like well thought out taper, you're just like showing up and trying to make sure 10 to 7 days out is when you start resting. So because you're trying to, you know, you're trying to use every last bit of workout to help figure out your position on the bike, what you're eating, you know, simple stuff like that.
So like if I was going to kind of put that together in like a do's don'ts of panic training, like do's or don'ts would be like, don't try and like get those giant fitness bump workouts that really bring you to that brink, because number one, you might not be in a position to handle that. And number two, you might not be able to recover in time when the race rolls around. So do the workouts that are kind of bringing you up. You feel a little bit tired, but good after them. Don't cross that line or try and like bump that line.
Yeah. Or, and like personally, I would say like, if you're going to do a little bit bigger workout, you have to like really make sure you have enough time to recover after. So if you thought, you know, oh, whatever, I'll have my long ride and then I'll have an easy day or whatever. Like you, if you do a long ride with a lot of hard work in it, maybe you need to have two easy days after it just to make sure that you're not blowing yourself up on that next workout. Oh, and then of course the other option is just don't go quite as hard and really focus in on what matters. And if we're talking specifically about like Ironman, half Ironman, like the pacing aspect and the fueling aspect, I'll just keep saying it, like that matters a ton. And then as well, like running, you really need to do whatever you can to make sure your legs can handle the pounding of the distance.
Wait a minute. You're supposed to pace an Ironman bike?
Yeah. I mean, like, follow the fast guy in front of you.
Just push hard on the pedals, right? And then do that for a long time. Isn't that?
I mean, I'm the one who's never done one, so I don't know what I'm talking about.
You know, I know this is sort of taking it a little bit in a different direction from our sport, but just as a side example, sometimes it's nice to hear things outside of our sport is Matt just did a weightlifting meet off of what would be considered panic training.
Yeah.
In other words, he decided like 2 weeks before he saw this meet pop up and he was like, I think I'm going to go to that. I mean, he looked at it, he keeps a really detailed training log for his whole life. And he was like in weightlifting, that's, you know, you do very specific cycles and preps and builds and tapers and all of these things. It's like down to the absolute pound. And he didn't do that obviously through the pandemic. He was like on week 33 of training, you know, which is like unheard of in that sport. And he just was like, I'm going to just go to this meet. And he was strong, probably the strongest he's been in like the last 20 years of his life. So I don't know what that says other than sometimes I think we can kind of experience things that we might not expect and don't always follow the rules. You know, we develop these rules and ideas of how things are supposed to work, what we see over time. And then every now and then, like that's what I think's unique about this year with the pandemic and then these races at the end of the year, is we might see some things and learn some things that we're like, that doesn't jive with anything we've ever seen in the history of this sport. However, this person just pulled off the performance of their life. And like what you were saying there, Jesse, with, you know, someone, if they've been consistently for the last 8 months doing 12 hours a week, and it's the most consistent they've ever been in their life because there's been no interruptions. And then they springboard into like 6 weeks of training that is, you know, gives them a little bit of a bump, and then they go there and boom, they have like the best performance of their life. So I think it'll be kind of interesting actually to see how some of the results are at the end of the year, whether everyone just kind of flops because they haven't been racing and they're like, actually, I'm not race fit and I'm not used to the stress of racing, or if there's like some surprises where we're like, oh wow, I didn't expect that, you know, because we certainly experienced that with Matt. He literally was conservative in all his attempts because he just expected it to not feel that strong. And then he was like, oh my gosh, I, you know.
But the one thing you and Matt both have is he has decades of lifting experience, for the listener who doesn't know. I think you said he's been lifting, what, 3 decades?
Yeah, over 3 decades now.
Oh, so, okay. But the point is, one, he has massive amount of competition experience. And two, he just had 3/4 of a year of consistent training, or whatever, 2/3 of a year. And he has the experience. So it's like, that's more an ode to consistency, right? The same as your training. And I think you're exactly right. Like if a person's just done consistent work, that's going to work great. I mean, literally my girlfriend, so she was 14th at World Champs, or WTS World Champs, I guess now World Triathlon World Champs or whatever they're calling it. Mm-hmm. But she didn't do anything specific for World Champs till 4 weeks out. It's just the whole summer. It was just, you know, okay, what do you need to do? Well, you're getting ready for triathlon at some point. So you have to be good at swimming, biking, and running. Let's just generally make sure you do a little more swimming, a little more biking, a little more running. We never did anything super fast. We never did anything super specific. And we just kind of like built her ability to do all 3 sports. And then sure, 4 weeks out, we said, hot damn, let's do a couple specific workouts and let it rip. And I'm assuming Matt did in those last couple weeks, he did like one or two sessions where he came like somewhat close.
That's the difference between our, no, that's the difference between weightlifting and you know, we can have a whole never conversation, but that is, yeah, especially those big guys who are heavyweights, they don't go heavy right before. They're just like, this is what I'm working with. This is my overall strength.
Or he doesn't do like a 70% or something like that.
That's Yeah, certainly.
That's what I meant. Like mm-hmm. more like just to get the feel.
Yeah. And something like that, he's working within 80% for those 33 weeks.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah. And again, I guess that's part of the difference between lifting and triathlon. Mm-hmm. What were you going to say, Jesse?
I was just really enthralled in the weightlifting and listening to it, actually.
Totally.
Now I feel like
sport,
a deer in headlights. Oh my gosh.
I am super good at pull-ups. I just want you to know that about me.
Oh, those little T-Rex arms probably help with that, don't they?
Yeah. The shorter your arms are, the better they are for pull-ups. Sorry.
All right. So let's say, like, if we're trying to give some actual advice for people that haven't been doing much and are looking at something like a race 6 weeks out, what do's and don'ts could be outlined for them?
I think the do's is really pay attention to the course you're getting ready for.
Did I just totally sideline you? Oh no.
You sidelined me. Don't send me texts if you want me to not laugh. Okay. So the do's of panic training is, figure out what your course is, know where, what your aid stations are, know what the fuel on the course is, know what the weather is. If you're going to panic train, like the one thing you can do well is the thing that sometimes people who train perfectly forget to do. And that's just to pay attention to all the little things. So figure out your nutrition on the day as best you can. Know where the handoffs are, know where the corners on the course are, you know, be prepared for whatever weather it might be. And if you're traveling to the race, make sure you kind of have all your different clothing options available. And then really try to like get in mentally when you're doing those workouts, try to put yourself in a place where you're like, you're pacing, but you're also visualizing the race. You're not like, right. Like you're pacing. Okay. I'm going to be holding this effort for 5 hours on the bike or whatever it's going to be. And you're like spending your training sessions, like visualizing the race more so than like, yes, you get fitness out of those sessions. You know, if you're going to do whatever, 2 by an hour or 2 by 75 minutes at Ironman pace, there's fitness to be gained, but there's also just like mentally putting yourself in the right place. I would say that's like the number one do for me is like fully give yourself the mental space to pay attention to everything you need to pay attention to in the race. That'd be number one for me. I don't know. What are some of your other do's?
Yeah, I agree with that 100%. And the other would just be to start to, you know, work yourself backwards from that race date to what time you have to work with and figure out where you can put in specific sessions that are going to be specific to the course and the conditions and all of those things. Because if you've got 6 weeks, you still have plenty of time to, you know, if you've been rolling that consistency to put in some very specific workouts. So if you haven't been doing that, say all summer long, you've been riding 4 or 5 hours on the weekend, they haven't had much structure, you've been on, you know, different bikes, whatever, and you're pretty used to the volume of being kicking it off, but like now you've got this 6 weeks to say, like you said, I can get on my time trial bike, I can start to add in these, you know, 2 by 60 minutes, you know, those kinds of things, and start to make it more specific for that period of time, and really map it out as far as like, how many of these can I do where I'm going to see some gain and recover from them, and you know, put those in place, like what's the terrain look like, how can I simulate that, like, you know, start to make it specific for sure.
I guess I'll give a do as well, since we're going a little round robin here. I would say that to just go opposite of Marilyn, I'd say look at where you're at and like maybe don't do what I did and do a big jump to get to where you think you need to be for like say an Ironman training block. Like look at where you're at and say, okay, right now I'm at this fit at say whatever 12 hours a week, and I can only go up so much incrementally before the race. So I'm going to take my current fitness and get it as far along as I can, and whatever fitness I have, like, I mean, whatever fitness I can get myself up to before race day, that's the fitness I'm going to race with. And I can't magically say go from rolling 12 hours a week to jump up to 25 for 6 weeks and then magically be perfectly Ironman fit come race day, and actually like stay in one piece. So really think about where you're at and then think about how you can gain the most fitness in that 6 weeks to get you as close to ready as you can be. And then say, okay, like I know this is about how fit I'm going to be. So what are the goals that make sense given where I'm at, given where I can be? And then how can I have like a really proper execution like Elliot was talking about with the fitness I'll have come race day, not like my dream fitness and like not my dream Ironman bike split, like what's feasible given where I'm at and where I can be without any big jumps. Because like we've all talked about, like you don't want to do anything that's going to get you injured or set back. So really thinking about like a logical linear progression to get you to the starting line, happy and healthy and in the best shape you can be, not like the best shape you could be if you had the perfect 6 months laid out in front of you.
Yeah. And I would say like one of my don'ts, if we can switch to don'ts,
let's do it.
Don't. I would say the big don't, and it's more of a big deal in the last few years than it was 10, 15 years ago, is like, basically don't look at other people's training. Don't do it. Don't
anytime, like, not even in panic training, just don't do it in general.
Yeah. Like it's just one more thing that like you're already in a situation where maybe you don't have that much confidence or you don't have like a maximum amount of confidence. It's not an optimal scenario. And so the last thing you need is to see anything else like that. And just like hands off, try not to pay attention to it. And I guess from the do aspect of it, that's like focus on your own shit, pay attention to yourself. You're the one who matters. And anybody who's kind of like bringing in like, oh, did you see what ABC did? Oh, that's so, like, don't pay attention to it. Just kind of do your own thing.
One thing I wanted to ask and add is that we were really directing this whole conversation towards long distance and Ironman. Mm-hmm. And so obviously if you're ITU or short course racer, you know, we're heavily weighted and talking about, you know, volume and hours that are all relevant to long distance racing. And I would assume if you're racing short course or you're racing ITU through this whole period of time, your volume's pretty close to striking range. It's more going to be like, if there's going to be a panic situation, it's going to be in the structure of the intensity. Elliot, you've obviously had to manage that sort of near and dear to your heart most recently. So what does that look like? And, you know, on the opposite spectrum of what we're, you know, focused on the long stuff here, if you're...
For sure. I think at the end of the day, triathlon's triathlon. And there's a reason why, the Ironman world didn't know who Gustav Iden did, but where I was sitting there heading into 70.3 Worlds last year thinking, of course Gustav Iden's going to be, I didn't know he was going to win, but if you would have told me he was out of the top five, I would have legitimately been surprised. But I also know he's consistently pulling the entire 40K and he's pulling the second pack up to the first pack. And I know how fast those first pack guys go. And Ironman people often like look at the overall mileage splits, but they don't know what those courses are like. And they're like, oh, they only average 26. And you're like, yeah, they average 26 with 30 U-turns, you know? And like, however many, right? And I was like, yes, they're drafting, but it was like that you have to be a very good rider to be able to do that. And the point being is triathlon's triathlon. So at the end of the day, the most important thing is just like, what's your threshold swimming? What's your threshold biking? What's your threshold running? And yes, if you're getting ready for a 750 swim. So I would say like the thing you're always trying to do is it's not how long can you hold the speed for, it's can you do the speed efficiently, period. Right? So like Erica's not focusing on just tons of 800s or 400s on the track. And there's people she's racing that are posting that on Strava and they're not running anywhere close to their speed because they're not focusing on what's their threshold first and foremost. And you see that there's a lot of talented people who are finding different ways to be fast, but everyone who's really good at the top end they're getting in steady, consistent, like they're doing their frequency. Swim, bike, run is pretty high, right? They're all doing at least five, probably six or sometimes seven sessions a week. They all have some sort of threshold work that they're working on continuously, more or less throughout the year. What that actually encompasses changes on the person. Like me personally, my vision of like what threshold is really for like the swim is something that you can do for like 15, 20 minutes, but bike and run, it's what you can do for an hour. And then it's not, can you run a 5K? Like in Erica's case, like we're not too concerned if she can run a flat out 16:30. I'm personally concerned, can she run a 100, 200, 300, 400 at that pace and have it feel smooth, even if it is with rest? And then that puts you in a situation when you're in the panic training. Oh, sure, the last couple workouts, you do more and more reps at that pace. But if she's already got the threshold, she's already got the volume, and she's comfortable with the efficiency of those speeds, then you're good to go. The other main difference is you never want to do anything too long, so that then, like in Ironman, right, you're doing all these 5-6 hour, sometimes 7-8 hour rides or really long runs, and those are needed for short course. But if you do them too long and then you have a speedy session where, let's say, you're going to do 12 200s with a 200 jog, where it's not a hard aerobic effort, it's more of like a neuromuscular kind of thing and a muscular thing. You want to make sure you're not too tired, so you can go in and feel smooth while you're doing that and feel confident, like, oh, this is something I can just rip off. And it makes that workout count that much more. I guess those workouts need a little more recovery heading into them, which means your overall volume might be a little bit less. And that's where you'd see this, like, instead of 30 hours a week, maybe they're in 25 or 26, right?
So basically, I mean, the general theme on both ends is the same. I mean, it just specific to the sport is, you know, with Ironman, it's more about if your volume's always within 80%, then the increase should be, you know, specific and small.
Mm-hmm.
And with short course, it's not necessarily the volume that you're focused on because of the short course. It's that the intensity is always within 80%. And then it gets, you know, you increase the intensity and make it with, you know, that last little bit. So it's one is obviously the same principle, just one is volume based and the other one is intensity based. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think that's pretty fair. And I also think the faster the Ironman person is in, I mean, if I'm gonna be totally honest, probably, I mean, Hoffman's probably the only person I coach this, like, no offense to Chris McDonald, who also won Ironmans while I coached him, but like Ben could do high end intensity stuff, but that was specifically because he's aiming for like the top few of Hawaii. And there's only a couple people in the world who can handle that and not break. And it took him freaking 7-8 years of more or less perfect training to even get there. And even then we were only doing it for a couple weeks a year. Right. So it is possible to have that mindset for the very, 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 very tip end. But I think like, there's going to be people who get top 10 at world championships who shouldn't have that mindset, and they'll still be able to perform that way. So for whatever that is worth.
Yeah.
But Jesse, how do you feel about that emotionally as someone who probably needs to be focusing more on the endurance and the threshold aspect of it?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think it all makes perfect sense. I mean, I think it's at the end of the day, there a triathlon is really different, but any facet of triathlon is an aerobic sport, right? Nothing's short enough. So everything we're doing is going to be based on having that aerobic capacity. And then the divergence comes in that, like, you need to have that little more intensity for the shorter stuff. And you need to make sure you have like the muscular endurance for the longer stuff, but we're rolling strong. Like, I mean, both of you guys talked about like having a solid base of like 25 hours a week for either end of the sport. So like everyone is mainly focused on having that aerobic capacity, and then what you do with it in the end there is where it seems like the difference comes in, right? You're doing longer stuff for Ironman, and then like you're doing shorter, harder stuff in some vein to work on either threshold or some just speed work in general for the short course, eh?
I like to think of it as efficiency, but yes.
And I think the other part too that you can add is we touched on it a tiny bit, is the mental side of things of managing athletes through that what feels like panic training. And so, you know, we're talking about how would you increase the training and what would you focus on in those small blocks and going forward from where you are to that date. But there's a huge aspect of emotionally, mentally managing athletes through that period. And you can also make a pretty big change for athletes in a short period of time if the details like their nutrition, their day-to-day nutrition hasn't been that good because they're like, well, I'm not racing, so, you know, I've let this or this kind of creep in, or their sleep patterns haven't been that great, those kinds of things. So you can look at the other things too, where there might be a performance gain that has nothing to do with actual training, but in the recovery aspects, you know, go through everything and say, could I gain just a little bit here? Maybe my training stays exactly the same for the next 6 weeks, but I make sure I get 8 hours of sleep every night. Some people, that's not even an option. You know, it just depends what your life is set up like. But okay, you can't sleep 8 hours a night. Maybe you've been having, you know, 3 beers a week and that's been okay through the whole year. And now you just got to cut it out for the next 6 weeks. So there's some really small things that you could see a performance gain that, you know, are just those little details outside training as well.
Yeah. That mental switch from like, oh, I'm just kind of training to I'm training with a goal and I'm focused right now. I think that's a big one. And I think the other thing I would do is, I would not call it panic training with an athlete. And if they were calling it that, I might come up with a different name of getting race ready in a short amount of time, because like we talked about in the beginning, panic training kind of elevates everyone's heart rate a little bit. And that's not exactly what we want to, the response we want to elicit. So, but yeah, getting race ready and doing the things like in training and then cleaning up the things out of training to help get there in the most efficient way possible, I think is a, you know, a good approach.
I kind of like the word panic though. I mean, it's kind of fun, right?
Oh, totally.
run an experiment where you have like group A athletes, group B athletes, and just go like, we're going to panic train. And then the other group, you'd be like, we're going to do a structured 6 weeks with focus towards your next goal and see, just like see what happens. Maybe the panic group will like bring an intensity level that will be like, oh wow, you're really giving it.
Yeah, serious business.
Yeah. I very much disagree, but I do think it's a fun idea. If you want to sabotage some, well, I think like, and that might, I mean, like Jesse with you, like, it's kind of a joke for you, right? Because like you often, you know, you like phrase things as like, I'm panic eating. Like before we got on this call, before you were on the call, he's like, oh, I'm panic eating. And I was like shoving a muffin in my face. I was like, yeah, me too.
But well, I can't Jesse eat for an hour. That's a big deal. I got to be ready.
Yeah. But my point is like, you were running around like, oh, what are we doing? But like, cause I've had such inconsistent training, like, cause obviously like I'm not a serious athlete like you guys, but,
Wait, hold on. Like, I'm not a serious athlete anymore.
Well, okay, but you were.
I was.
But like, I've jumped into a lot of stuff pretty unprepared and just did like very serious training, but just for a short period of time. And like,
so would you say you're an expert panic trainer then?
Yeah, I think I'm super good. I went from like, I did a marathon with never having run more than 7 miles for months, maybe the whole year before. And then I ran, you know, like, but I had it planned out and I did 12 miles 8 days before, and I couldn't walk without pain until 3 days before the race, cause I was so sore from just jogging 12 miles. But like, I figured it out and then I did the race and my sub-3 hour streak's intact. But like, I did my fueling perfectly. I never went too fast early on, you know, and I knew my legs could handle probably 16 miles till they were completely blown to hell. But like, so it was like, I was always aware in terms of like, what do I need to do to be able to make this happen? You know, but like part of that was I'd done a couple marathons and my previous marathons also had bad lead-ins. So it was like, I was experienced in like kind of how to do this, you know what I'm saying?
You know what, that's actually a really valuable story, because the most valuable thing about that is that your level of expectation was in the right place. You know, yeah. Like you knew, because I, and you know what, I've experienced a similar thing. One time I did the double rough water in Hawaii, and I didn't do it when I was a triathlete. I did it after I'd been out of the sport for a while and I was doing like CrossFit, and I was like, I'm going to go do the double rough water, open water swim. And I'm not a great swimmer anyway. So, and same thing, I went in completely underprepared. And my only thought was, is God, I don't want to cramp up out in the middle of the ocean in just like a swimsuit. And so like, I paced probably the best I ever have in my entire life as an athlete, just out of simple, like, I knew I wasn't fit enough to go that far technically, but I actually, you know, I had the right expectations and I paced really, really well, knowing, hey, this is like 10K out in the sea in a swimsuit is pretty far. Yeah.
And that's scary. Yeah. And like, I still, in my story, I still blew up, but I only blew up at like mile 23 and a half or whatever. And then I was like, yeah, sure. I don't remember how slow I went, but like I slowed down a lot per mile, but like it was only 2 miles worth, as opposed to what really would have happened if I would have went how I felt, it would have been 15 miles worth of blowing up.
Right.
And probably a lot of walking.
So. I think the takeaway from both those stories, right, is that how much more important pacing becomes the less prepared you are. Like when I've been super,
you have less matches.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And like when I've been super prepared for Arizona, I could make a lot of mistakes on the bike and I would be okay because I like, practiced making those mistakes week after week on the group rides here. So I was ready to do stupid things and I could do that and then recover. Like it might not have been the best way, but like I was in a position fitness wise where I could, and like, you know, maybe I'm not this time. So having a little bit of fear can definitely be a good thing as far as like pacing goes. And I think, yeah, the less fit you are, the really it becomes even more and more important to not make any pacing mistakes, especially early on in anything, in any distance, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. It's the same in bike racing too. So
I guess if you guys wanted to kind of like wrap it up and give a few kind of closing words on, we kind of ran through some do's and don'ts, but anything you want to say to kind of like pull it all together or, you know, sound smart right at the end here, what do you guys have for me?
Don't be like Jesse.
That's good advice.
I think, really take a good hard look at what the race is, what your body is currently capable of. Take a deep breath and be honest with yourself, and then do everything you can in between wherever you are in the start of the race to get yourself fit and prepared for the race. And then on the day of the race, really focus on pacing, but like come the last quarter, three quarters of the race, like you're there to race and like give it hell, basically. Like that's what you're there for. And then that's what you're trying to see what you're capable of. And keep in mind, like, yes, you're pacing, but like pacing, if you're really pacing, that's the most honest thing you can do, because that's putting yourself out there to really see what you're actually capable of. You're not shooting yourself in the foot. You're saying, I'm going to just drill this pace and I'm going to do it. And if I do it right, that last quarter or last 20, 15% of the race, I'm going to ramp it up. But if I paced it right, I'm only going to be able to ramp it up a tiny bit. And if I don't, hopefully I only blow up by a little bit and it's going to be really, really painful in the process. But like just kind of eye on the prize, focus on what you're doing and have fun with it.
Yeah. I love all of that. And the only thing I would add to it is if you're in that, like, pardon me, that time frame where you feel like it's a panic train, everything you do from the time that starts to race day, every session you do, ask yourself, am I doing something that's productive towards showing up at that event healthy and ready? Or am I tipping over the edge unnecessarily or taking unnecessary risk in order to try and get that last little bit of percentage out of myself because it's being emotionally driven? And so if every time you ask that, if someone, you think, I'm going to push just a little bit harder, I'm going to go a little bit longer, I'm going to, you know, and ask yourself, is this actually going to help? Or is this a risk that is unnecessary to take and could possibly see me not even get to the start line? And I think if you, through that entire last little bit, if you ask yourself that in those key moments, you're going to get there strong, fit, healthy, and ready to, you know, like you say, ready to rip it mentally.
Awesome. I think you guys did a great job. I don't want to mess it up and add anything on top of that that'll muddle the waters. So I think we should call it there. Thank you guys very much for having a little discussion on panic training. I definitely feel a little bit better about what I'm going to do the next 6 weeks. So I really appreciate it.
For the listener, Jesse started with a dry shirt and ended completely pits soaked through. So you know he's in a panic.
I'm totally panicking right now, but I'm trying not to. I'm trying to focus.
Awesome. Thanks so much for having us. This was a fun conversation.
Yeah. Thanks, guys. Jesse. Well, we'll talk to you guys again soon.
Cheers.
Press the wrong button.